You're listening to IsraelScene.com.
And you're listening to IsraelScene.com.
Listening to IsraelScene.com.
Seen through the eyes of Steve, that's myself.
And you're on.
Two characters passionate about everything that happens in Israel.
IsraelScene.com.
And you're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram. One of the things about being in Tel Aviv, Steve and I and Liz, Steve's wife, have been attending a class at the Alma School right around the corner from Steve's house. And the class yesterday dealt with the subject of Jewish identity, which is a hot button item. Is that how they call it?
Yeah, it's certainly topical.
Very topical, particularly here in Israel. Well, we like to talk about ourselves a lot. We are really a fascinating subject, I got to admit it. And one of the things about living in Israel is that almost everybody you come across, you can have a conversation on the subject with, and most everybody has an opinion somewhat and perspective somewhat different than yours. Our teacher yesterday, whose name escapes me at the moment, began the class structured the class around a court case, a very famous court case in the annals of the Israeli court system, the Supreme Court.
That was Ronnie Jagger, by the way.
The story takes place in Poland. This is a man named Rufsin, who was born in 1922 in Poland, in a city called Mir, which is was the home of a very famous yeshiva, the Mir Yeshiva. And when the war broke out in 1941, he was originally imprisoned by the Gestapo, and he escaped. And then he obtained forged documents which showed that he was a German Christian. And as such, he became a translator and secretary for the local police chief in the city of Mir. The police chief's office eventually morphed into the headquarters of the Gestapo, and he maintained his position. He was obviously an intelligent fellow who spoke German, could translate between German and Polish, and was very useful. Became the right-hand man of the Nazi authority in the city of Mir, and as such was privileged to the plans of the Nazis vis-a-vis the Jews, and he felt it his duty to warn the Jews when certain actions were about to take place. And at a particular point, he was denounced by an informer to the Germans, who couldn't really believe that this wonderful and loyal and intelligent young man, he was in 19, 20 years old, was in fact spying for the Jews. And the story was they couldn't figure out why he would be spying for the Jews, and only eventually did he explain to them that he himself was Jewish. Well, of course, they arrested him and imprisoned him and intended to execute him. He managed to escape, found his way to the partisans, the guerrillas who were fighting against the Nazis, and he escaped and found refuge in a monastery. And then he worked with the partisans, he fought with the partisans. They suspected that he was a German spy and they were about to execute him, but he was saved by a Jew from Mir who testified to the fact that he was in fact a Jew. While he was in the monastery in 1942, he converted to Christianity. He had some kind of a personal experience, converted to Christianity, and in 1945, at the end of the war, he became a priest, and he specifically joined the Carmelite order, knowing that he would be able to move to the Carmelite Center in Haifa. And he was finally able to come, or I don't know how it works in the church, but I think he was finally able to be sent to the Carmelite monastery in Haifa.
Supposedly that's the reason why he actually wanted to join the Carmelites, so he could come to Israel.
So in 1958 he arrived here. And the court case revolved around the fact that he wanted that his identity papers, his identity card, should identify him as Jewish by nationality. And it raised the issue in the High Court, and we raised the issue in our class of the issue of Jewish identity. What does it mean to be a Jew, to be identified by the Jew for yourself, self-identity? And in the context here in Israel, the issue is being identified as a Jew from a legal point of view. So we ended it with the idea that the issue had to do with his personal identity, and in Israel, it had to do with his legal identity.
Right. So as a result of that, he was he challenged, since he was Christian, he was not given on his identity card, which we all have. At the time, they put the religion down, and he was put down as Christian, not Jewish. And so he petitioned the High Court stating that he meets all the obligations of being Jewish, and that just because he happens to be Christian, he still identifies strongly as Jewish, and he has this history behind him to support that. The end result is immaterial, but we'll share what the final result was of the High Court. But the point being is, what is being Jewish? And what is Jewish identity, which was the whole point of the evening, which was fascinating.
One of the things that we realized was that up until the founding of the State of Israel, that identity issue was left totally in the hands of the religious definition, which is to have a Jewish mother or to have been formally converted to Judaism. But with the founding of the state being secular, and this particular case coming before the court and requiring a formal decision on the part of an instrument of that state, which required it to explore the question, and that's part of from my point of view at least, the purpose of the state is, which is to provide us with a place and a situation which we need. We are forced to deal with this issue, and forced to deal with this issue on more than just a religious perspective, because we are, in fact, more than a religion, and a legal one.
In this particular case, he was denied. Since he was a practicing Christian, he was denied the status of being Jewish for legal purposes. Not necessarily denying him, because the court certainly made it clear that no one's denying him that on religious grounds he may, in fact, still be legally Jewish. But in terms of the intent of the state, he has given up that right by proclaiming himself to be Christian.
By practicing another religion.
Well, and proclaiming that he is a Christian, even though he feels himself being Jewish, and I'm sure he did. But in a sense, that was the first real test of the law of return, which has implications, and fast forward to all the Russian immigration, where many of the Russians were not practicing Jews, or in fact were practicing Christians, or nothing. And their only connection to being Jewish was through their grandparents, but that we set that up based upon the Nazi laws of what they determined was Jewish, and that's how the law of return evolved. That we developed what it was to be Jewish based upon what they claimed was somebody was Jewish, even though they might have been a couple of generations where they were not actually practicing at all.
In other words, if we were Jewish for the Nazis, now we're Jewish for the Jews.
Jewish for the Jews, right. My understanding of that. The interesting thing, of course, the Jewish identity is, which is we shared before off, was that I believe that this is a very important paradigm for Jews and Judaism, and for Judaism to continue on, who knows, unless the planet gets blown up, for another maybe millennium at least. And I believe that at every important juncture, especially when we have now a state that identifies as being Jewish, and in spite of the fact that some left-wing folks would love to present the argument, how can you be a Jewish state and be democratic, and which I will put aside for now, because I think they can both live side by side. The fact is that this is a moment in time, I believe, where we as Jews are now dialoguing, if I can use that word, about what it is to be Jewish, and not only in an Orthodox context, but in other contexts as well. Still, in a sense, religious, but just from a different angle, a different perspective. One no longer is being defined as Jewish solely by the Orthodox, but now we're struggling in our arena of debate as to what it is in a religious perspective from all the different denominations, and also in a secular perspective, what it is to be Jewish and not necessarily be religious. And that's why now slowly opening up in the State of Israel are called secular houses of study, studying the ancient texts, but doing it with people who are not particularly practicing according to the Orthodox tradition, or according possibly to any of the other denominational traditions. And taking that learning, which is exciting and dynamic if anybody's ever done it, and bringing it into the street in doing tikkun olam, social action, but doing it from a traditional knowledge base And then, and having met some of these students, passion behind them, the excitement, the upliftment that they get from the text gives them that energy to go out into the streets and to take the social injustices and make them right to the best of their ability. And that's exciting.
And now I remember, I was trying to remember what it was we heard that Ruth Calderon, who was the director of the Alma School, and Yossi Beilin, who was a member of the Meretz Party, were working together to try and create a secular conversion process for people who wished to be Jewish but didn't necessarily want to take Judaism on a halachic religious standard.
In order to technically be converted here in an Orthodox manner, you have to essentially vow that you're going to live according to the commandments that are possible, and that you have to live an Orthodox lifestyle.
Which I think we should point out, most Jews in Israel don't.
Don't, and I think most Jews in the world, we can say, don't, according to the Orthodox perspective or prescription of what it is to practice Judaism, okay? And to say that here is so unfair to the people who are being converted, because they want to be Jewish. For whatever reasons, they want to take on that quote-unquote joyful burden, but not necessarily according to the ways or the precepts of Orthodoxy in its strict interpretation of the law. And that makes a real dilemma, so that others don't have that opportunity to take on whatever grade or level they want to take on initially, and whatever that means later on in their lives, but develop into it or not. And you have to essentially create a lie for yourself in order to get converted here, if you want to follow the official conversion that the state recognizes here in Israel alone, because you can be converted outside of the country, which is so bizarre, through wherever other denominations, and then come to Israel, make Aliyah, return here to live, and be accepted fully as Jewish. So we are in that chaotic moment of trying to develop a clarity, an understanding within Israel and the Jews here, and in the greater Jewish world, because we impact them and they impact us in a very real sense today, which we in Israel have come, I feel, for the most part, to recognize and accept. Because in the old days, as you know, when someone left Israel for whatever reason, we considered them going down into, you know, that other place, and almost like a betrayal. And today we're much more sophisticated, much more mature as a nation, and we realize that there's a coming and a going that's going to take place that may in fact be very healthy for us as a nation, and also healthy for the rest of the Jewish communities around the world, if we create a society and a country that is enticing for people to come and live, which we know how enticing it is, but how frustrating it can be here, because it's still somewhat third world in certain elements. In a first world economic base, it creates a challenge to be here. And if we make it more pliable, more open for people to come, and Jews to come and to live here for a variety of reasons, then more will come and less will have a reason to leave. And I think this is what the paradigm is about, because I think this will put us into a place of great strength in accepting the diversity of the Jewish world, which we've always had, in spite of what some believe. We've always been diverse. And to be able to, in that diversity, to move forward as Jews, as a Jewish nation, as a Jewish state, and as a Jewish world. And I think we're moving in that direction. But there's a lot of pain that goes with it, a lot of change that has to take place.
It's a real challenge. I would very much like, and hopefully we'll be able to interview Ruth Calderon and hear some of her ideas on what she had thought would be a secular conversion, and share those with our listeners and stimulate people, hopefully, to think about this subject and to, you know, it says, "V'dibarta bam b'shift," after you say the Shema, you say another paragraph in which you talk, you say that these are the subjects that you will talk about when you're walking in the street. It's the subjects you talk about with your children in the morning, in the evening. These are the issues. These are the subjects that we are bidden to discuss and to have on our minds and to chew and to wrestle with. It's what Arthur Waskow called God wrestling, I think. It's part of that process, which is what Yisrael is. Yisrael is those who wrestle with God, and the name Yisrael comes after the wrestling with God. That's the prize that Jacob wins for having wrestled with God and having succeeded, or wrestled with an angel and having won. He is renamed, and he's named Yisrael, he who wrestles with the divine.
And it's a time that, at least in this country, that we do plenty of wrestling, because we've allowed, for a variety of reasons, to relinquish our ownership of Torah, our ownership of Jewish identity, for the most part, to one particular group of people. And it's now time to take it back. And we're seeing that in the secular yeshivot, in the secular schools of learning, the sacred texts, and what that promotes and what that produces with the young generation, of identifying strongly, but in a way that we take this seriously and we're going to apply it in the real world. We're just not going to sit there and get high, in a sense, off of the text, which is extraordinarily intellectually stimulating, to be able to take that and to really make it ours. And that's what I'm finding so exhilarating.
I just wanted to add one other perspective on this. When this subject was being debated a number of years ago, a rabbi, Shlomo Goren, who had been the chief rabbi of the Israeli army and was then the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of the state of Israel itself, proposed that a person who came here who wished to be Jewish would be considered Jewish for as long as he was here, and that once he left Israel, then the rest of the Jewish people, the diaspora community, he would then become subject to their definitions of Jewish. But he didn't require in some way a formal Orthodox conversion. He felt that a person who was here, a non-Jew who came here, and I know several who felt themselves to be a part of the people, who, you know, became citizens, who served in the army, who made children who served in the army, and who were committed themselves and their lives and their creative energies to this place, and wanted to consider themselves to be Jewish, would be considered Jewish while they were here for this purpose, for this, in this time and in this context, which was a whole different, an entirely different approach to Jewish identity than I think it had ever been proposed before, and that it came from someone of the stature of Rabbi Goren. It speaks itself to the interesting and the significant issue that this places, and it fits in with our category of the Jewish Ideas series. And we'll do that. And until we do, we'll end this program again with Hatikva, the hope. And we have our various hopes and our various aspirations, and they are represented by this particular poem and this particular music.
So this is Steve.
And Yoram.
And you're listening to Israel Scene. Shavua Tov. Have a great week.